strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, good morning, everybody. I'm Barry Markson in for Broomhead today. Mike's back tomorrow. And boy, oh boy, tough weekend here in the Valley. We had the Suns, and then, of course, what happened in Buffalo. And if you somehow missed that over the weekend, there was just a racist shooting, an 18-year-old guy who, full-on racist, and walked into a supermarket in Buffalo and killed 10 people or shot 10 people. I mean, the whole thing is just amazing what occurred. And without question, he is a white nationalist. He is a racist. He's all about this white replacement theory. And we know that because of what was etched into his gun. We know that because he wrote a 180-page memo about why, where he was and why he was doing this. We know it because he put a GoPro on his helmet. He was fully armored and in military gear and put a GoPro on his helmet to live stream what he was doing when he was murdering these people. We know all that. And I'm not going to come in here and talk about gun control or anything else right now. This weapon, by the way, was purchased legally in New York, so which has some of the toughest gun control laws in the state. But what I am going to talk about is our community responsibility, all of us, for allowing this sort of rhetoric to be out there and to allow it to be there all the time and to support our leaders, our supposed leaders who keep doing this. And the replacement theory, if you haven't heard about this, I mean, the real conspiracy of the replacement theory is that that the Jews are somehow bringing in people from other countries into the United States to overwhelm the white population here and turn it into a different country. That's the theory. It goes back to, remember, a few years ago in Charlottesville when those racists were walking down the street chanting, you know, the Jews will not replace us. And it basically says, if you're not white, if you're anything else, you're the enemy. These people feel, and the rhetoric has gotten more and more extreme and more violent, that the country is being attacked and is changing. And, you know, no one more than the thing is, this sort of thing has always been there, but it was on the fringes. It was a far, far fringe. And if somebody said it, you just ignored them, or you said, this guy's nuts, and put him over there and don't let him talk to us anymore. But what we're finding now is it's entering the mainstream. This QAnon stuff is entering the mainstream. And when I say mainstream, I don't just mean it's on social media. I mean, it's politicians doing this. Elise Stefanik, who's the number three Republican in leadership in the House, she's the one who replaced Liz Cheney. She put out a tweet 2 days ago called Democrats pedo grifters, just called people a pedophile because she disagrees with their opinion on something. And that's a QAnon thing. And that's being done by House leadership. And she's, by the way, Elise Stefanik is as elite and Northeastern. She's a Northeastern Republican, Harvard graduate. I mean, she knows this is ridiculous. And she's putting it out there because for some reason she thinks, and other politicians think, that this is how you raise money and get votes. It's to scare people. And that's always been a political thing, but it's to scare people. And it just keeps getting more and more extreme. This is Tucker Carlson, who talks about this sort of thing all the time on his incredibly highly rated cable show.
In a democracy, one person equals one vote. If you change the population, you dilute the political power of the people who live there. So every time they import a new voter, I become disenfranchised as a current voter. So I don't understand why you don't understand this. I mean, everyone wants to make a racial issue out of it. Ooh, the, you know, white replacement theory. No. This is a voting rights question. I have less political power because they're importing a brand new electorate. Why should I sit back and take that? The power that I have as an American, guaranteed at birth, is one man, one vote, and they're diluting it. No, they're not allowed to do that.
Yeah, they're not diluting it. That's how this country has always grown. What are we diluting it when someone has a baby? Are we diluting it as a family that has eight kids? Are they diluting the vote in a way that if they're going to vote in some way that you don't want, as if we know how each individual person is going to vote? Most of us, almost all of us, our families were immigrants. People, our families started by somebody in our family coming to the United States from somewhere else. whether they were looking for just opportunity, whether they were escaping persecution. Most of us have in our history, and not all that distant history, people have come here to the United States. It's not diluting the vote. That's the history of this country. That's what we've always done. But this is racist. And I want to make sure I'm being clear. He's saying that white Americans have one vote per person. And when we bring in non-whites or people that he doesn't approve of, it's diluting his vote. And when you say this over and over, you get people riled up. They think the country is under attack. They think their rights are being taken away. And that's simply not the case. But that's what we're facing now. And I'm going to bring this to Arizona. We have politicians in our state who go to white nationalist conferences and speak at these things, who put out racist and anti-Semitic things on Twitter. We have them here. Paul Gosar is a congressman in Arizona. And by the way, he could win in his district by simply talking about mainstream Republican business social issues. You don't have to be an extreme crazy person to win a Republican vote here in Arizona, and certainly not in Paul Gosar's district. But guess what? That's what he does all the time. Wendy Rogers is in a district where if she's the nominee, she's going to win. It's a heavily Republican district. She does not need to be a right-wing conspiracy racist white nationalist person to win re-election. And yet that's what she does. Wendy Rogers, right after this happened in Buffalo, right after this guy killed 10 people, this racist killed 10 people, and has a whole manifesto talking about white nationalism and replacement theory, things that Wendy Rogers has talked about. Wendy Rogers has spoken at these conferences. She put out a tweet that says it's a Fed boy. She basically said it's a red flag, that this is a federal false flag operation, that the federal government is behind this shooting. I guess to make her and her other people look bad. It's unbelievable. And so it's easy for me to say, look at Paul Gosar, look at Wendy Rogers, they're so extreme, this is awful. But I'm going to call out all of us. And I'm not here to say we're racist or you're racist. I'm not saying that at all, because I know you're not. I don't think you are. What I'm saying is, why are we putting up with the racists? We didn't used to do that. And it's what we're looking for is leadership. Where is the leadership in Arizona? Where is the Republican leadership in Arizona to say enough? To say we don't need Paul Gosar. Let's run somebody against Paul Gosar and give him the support of the political establishment here in Arizona and say, hey, we can bring in a very conservative, absolute Trump-loving Republican who's not a white nationalist. We can do that. Why is Wendy Rogers there? There's somebody running against Wendy Rogers now, Kelly Townsend, who's as far right as you can get, believe me. But she's running against Wendy Rogers, and I give Kelly Townsend credit. She was going to run for Congress, and she lost. She ended up having to withdraw because she came out against Wendy Rogers when Wendy Rogers did her last white nationalist thing. Wendy Rogers was one of the, Kelly Townsend was one of the few people to stand up and say, no, this is wrong. And I give her a lot of credit, and now she's running in a primary against Wendy Rogers. Where is Doug Ducey and other leaders in our Republican Party standing up and saying, we're behind Kelly Townsend, not Wendy Rogers? Where is that? Where is Doug Ducey, and he's the governor of the state and the leader of the Republican Party in this state. Where is Doug Ducey, who's a lame duck governor? This is his last year. He's not running for re-election. He's not running for Senate. He can stand up and say the right thing, and he can bring people with him. He can have a press conference with Republican leaders from around the state to say, we do not support white nationalism and racism and anti-Semitism, and we do not support these people. We don't support Paul Gosar and Wendy Rogers and their ilk, because they're not Republicans, and those are not our values, and we don't support it. It's not hard to do, and the vast majority of the people will be behind you. Where are those leaders? Where's Carrie Lake, who's running for governor, and took an endorsement from Paul Gosar and Wendy Rogers? Is Carrie Lake a racist? I hope not, but my goodness, it's not that hard to renounce those people and renounce that endorsement. There's Rodney Glassman, who's running as a Republican now for Attorney General and took a Paul Gosar endorsement, which is amazing to me. Where is he standing up and saying, hey, I want to be your Attorney General. I want to be the number one law enforcement officer in the state. I'm not going to stand with white nationalist racists. I'm not going to do it. Where is that? Where are the leaders in Arizona? Not just to say, we're not racist, I'm not racist, but to say, to renounce the people in your own party who are. Where does that start? All right, coming up, we got a little something going on here in the city of Phoenix. Chief Jerry Williams is retiring, but there's some allegations against her. We're going to tell you about those next. I'm Barry Markson, in for Broomhead. It's KTAR.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, welcome back, everybody. I'm Barry Markson, in for Broomhead. Thanks for joining us. And, you know, you've been hearing about Chief Jerry Williams of the Phoenix Police Department. She's retiring this summer and kind of had that announcement and had some good accolades come her way. I don't know her personally, and I've met her, and I think she does a good job, but frankly, I'm not in the middle of it, so I don't know. But some interesting information has come out now. You may recall there were some charges brought against people who were protesting here in Arizona. And there were claims that it was a conspiracy, but that some police officers and some folks in the Maricopa County Attorney's Office kind of got together to bring criminal charges against what was otherwise peaceful protesters. And those charges were dismissed on February 12th of 2021 with prejudice, which means they can't be brought again, based on several deficiencies in the criminal street gang related charges. Because they were accusing these people of being a street gang and being criminals when they were protesters. And what's come out now is, after that happened, three assistant chiefs were demoted. And they have now turned around and sued the department. They sued Chief Jerry Williams and Ed Zucker, the city manager, for defamation. And one of the things that they're saying is that they made statements about them that Chief Williams didn't know about it, and they're saying she did. They're saying that all three were demoted without written notice or an evidentiary hearing, based on claims that they failed to tell Chief Williams of the county attorney's decision to pursue gang related charges, they claim now that the city. They can't lawfully discipline them without first providing them with an evidentiary hearing and some other things. But they further claim that Williams and others that did media campaigns against the three assistant chiefs, placed them in a false light and said some things that were untrue. So it's an interesting little corollary to what's going on with Chief Williams and her retirement. It's also, you know, people have wondered, why is she retiring? And obviously a ton of stress. Obviously, there have been a lot of shootings with police officers here in Arizona recently. It's a very stressful job. But you have this suit, and you also have the Department of Justice investigating the Phoenix Police Department. So I don't know how much of that has played into her decision or where things are going, but not entirely a smooth road on the road to retirement here for Chief Jerry Williams. So we'll keep an eye on that, and of course bring you up to date here on KTAR as we continue to get more information. Coming up, Jeff Munn is standing by in the KTR News Center. He's going to get you up to date on everything happening here in Arizona and around the world. And then on the other side, we're going to talk about childhood anxiety. And this is something that goes from children all the way up through college students, probably for all of us, but certainly in people in that realm, in that age groups, the additional anxiety that was brought on by COVID, by the lockdowns, by everything else. We're going to talk about that a little bit as we're getting back to normal. Are we leaving some of our kids in the background, not able to fully get back to where they should be? We'll talk about that next. I'm Barry Markson, in for Broomhead. It's KTAR.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, welcome back, everybody. I'm Barry Marks, and in for Broomhead. Mike's back in the big chair tomorrow. And, you know, this is something that I think a lot of us are dealing with right now if you have kids. And when I say kids, I don't just mean little kids. It can be really up through college. And I'm sure it's affecting adults, too, but it's anxiety. We're seeing more and more anxiety now. And I do think a lot of this was brought on during COVID. I think it was brought on by the lockdown and the stress from COVID. Some people just reacted in a very, very stressful way. And I think for kids, and especially young kids, it absolutely delayed their social development somewhat. I mean, a lot of, you know, look, kids learn to be with other people and to kind of get, you know, that they don't need to be anxious about things by doing it, right? I mean, if you're 3 years old, 4 years old, 5 years, I mean, just keep going up. You learn every year. That's part of what school is, right? I mean, part of being in school, obviously, is to learn, but it's also to learn social manners, to learn to be with other people and to how to interact with others. And now studies are finding that the anxiety level amongst our children is at an all-time high. And it's some of these numbers are really quite surprising. And you notice it, you know, maybe your child doesn't want to go to the playground or play with other kids, or she doesn't want to attend a friend's birthday or a class pool party. You know, things that you would expect children to want to do. You're seeing some now saying, no, I don't want to go. And let's be honest, you're seeing that with adults too, right? I mean, I know adults now who kind of got used to being at home, being alone during COVID, and they're either, you know, they're going to tell themselves, I just enjoy it better, but I do think there's some level of social anxiety that comes with that. But about one-fifth of children, and when I say children in this study, it's kids who are 3 to 17 years old, about one-fifth of children have anxiety symptoms that are clinically elevated or worse. And that means that they're being seen by, they've been diagnosed with anxiety. So think about that for a second. Almost, you know, 9.4%, we're coming up on 10%. And it's 5.8 million kids had actually been diagnosed with anxiety. And that was even before COVID. So this is something that's going up and really something to deal with. And what they say is if you notice anxiety in your children, the best thing you can do is to see it early and to get some medical intervention, to get some treatments for your son or your daughter. The earlier they spot it, the earlier they have those conversations, the better outcomes we can expect. So for general anxiety, some of the symptoms that you can see are difficulty concentrating, trouble sleeping, bedwetting, bad dreams, not eating properly. That's how you know I'm not anxious. Clinginess, lack of confidence to try new things, avoidance of everyday activities, such as seeing friends or going out in public, and especially if that's a change. You know, anytime you see a change in your child on something like this, something they used to enjoy doing, they're not doing now, that can often be a sign of anxiety. Inability to talk in some social situations, reassurance seeking. In other words, they repeatedly ask questions to reconfirm worries, such as exactly when and where you're going to pick them up from school, if the weather's really going to be nice enough for a play date, things like that. And then physical symptoms, such as going to the restroom too often, tearfulness, headaches, dizziness, lightheadedness, sweatiness. I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff here. If you see something different, that's when you want to talk about it. And the best thing I think would be to go, you know, to talk to your doctor, your pediatrician, and then let the doctor help guide you to the best place to go. But this is bad. And then social anxiety, and I will tell you, we're seeing more and more of that. It's avoiding or refusing to go to school, refusing to speak, poor social skills. I will tell you that, and I'm involved in a charity that has a preschool, and I will tell you that we're seeing more and more of that, the social anxiety, and it's just young kids who, because they missed a year plus oftentimes of being around other kids, have missed that social growth, and they're struggling with it a little bit, and schools and preschools are having to deal with this. It's just something that is there now and something that we're going to have to deal with together as a society. So it's, you know, the important thing is to see it and to recognize it when you can. Don't just think, you know, sometimes we think it's a, you know, a discipline issue, or somebody, you know, kids aren't acting or behaving properly. And I'm not here, believe me, I'm the last person to tell you that a kid who's misbehaving, you treat them like they have anxiety instead of teaching them how to behave right. But I do think we need to be aware in this post-COVID world with, I think as adults, a lot of adults had a lot of anxiety with COVID and the lockdown and everything that occurred from that, the masking. But I will tell you, I think we overlook the effect it may have on our kids. And it's not just young kids. It's you know, middle school, high school, and even college kids. I mean, there have been all sorts of studies out now that college kids are struggling. They don't want to go to class. Colleges are seeing all sorts of problems with students who are I just read this story the other day about a professor who's been around for 20 years. He said he's never seen anything like it. There's kids in his class, and it's not a big class. They just put their head down on their desk and go to sleep right there in class. They don't answer questions. They fail tests. They don't hand in work. He said, I've always seen some of that, but the amount of it now and the extreme of it, what he's seeing now, he said, is just amazing. And then he thought, well, maybe it's me. Maybe I'm an old fuddy-duddy and I've lost the kids and they're not paying attention. This is college. And he posted something on a professor board, and a whole bunch of his friends came back and said, no, we're seeing the same thing. And I have to attribute that to even at the college-age kids, high school and college-age kids, when they were not in the classroom, not doing the things they're used to doing, I think they forget how to take a normal test in a classroom. I think they forget how to interact with teachers and what they're supposed to be doing, how to do that work to make sure that you do well in school. I think that's happening right now, and I think we have to recognize that. I think we're missing a lot of it, and schools, you know, a lot of colleges are making things easier and trying to let, you know, the stuff slide, but I think that's going to start to stop here pretty soon. It's going to be over soon, but I think we need to pay attention to it. So just a thought, keep an eye on the anxiety levels, especially of your kids and certainly of yourself too, but that's definitely something I think we're all dealing with it now. It's very interesting. All right, coming up, we've all been flying, and if you've been on a plane lately, boy, they're busy. Hard to get a flight. Prices are way up, and when you get on the plane, it's packed. Well, airlines are scrambling with a new problem. We'll have details for you next. Stay with us, everybody. I'm Barry Markson, in for Broomhead. It's KTAR.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, everybody. Welcome back. I'm Barry Markson, in for Broomhead. And boy, if you're starting to travel again, you know what we're facing out there. I mean, prices are up and the costs are high. And a lot of that is the airlines don't have enough flights to meet the demand. I mean, they're trying, but they're struggling. And what happened, there's several aspects of this, but on the pilot front, apparently we have the largest shortage of pilots in the United States that most people can remember in history. It's a real problem right now. And it's really for a couple of reasons. One is during the pandemic, a lot of airlines slowed down their training and hiring of pilots and offered a whole bunch of pilots early retirement. Now, remember this, the airline industry was really in a bad place for quite a while. And they have unions. These pilots have unions. A lot of the employees have unions. So these folks get paid. They're on, you know, even if they're furloughed, there's a whole kinds of rules. So what I think a lot of the airlines did was they offered the pilots, they said, hey, if you want to retire early, we'll give you a big package to kind of induce you to do that. And some of the pilots did. And so they, when travel came back after COVID started to die off and people started traveling again, the airlines didn't even have enough pilots to call back. They started calling those pilots back. It took a while to do that. If you remember some of the issues we were having, you know, 6 months ago, 8 months ago. But now what they're finding is they just don't have enough pilots. There aren't enough out there. And as a result, they're struggling. They're cutting flights. And that's why you're seeing the price of airline tickets go up so high. There aren't enough flights to match demand. And as with anything else, the price goes up. That's how this works. The process to become an airline qualified U.S. pilot is very lengthy. It's a long process. It's expensive. It's hard to become a pilot. And there are some big issues here. So there are people making some suggestions. They're saying this is at least a 5-year problem. I mean, this isn't going to go away tomorrow. It isn't like we can just create trained pilots here quickly. But there are some suggestions that people are making to try to speed this along. So, for example, one lawmaker, he's suggesting that they could raise the federally mandated retirement age for pilots from the current 65 years old. So at 65 right now, if you're a pilot, you have to retire. End of story. They think we could raise that to 67 or even higher to extend some pilots' time in the air. You know, assuming people want to keep working, that would help. Regional airlines, and those are the airlines like Mesa Air here in the Valley, that fly the smaller routes. They might be under a larger airline's kind of umbrella, but they're the ones, if you jump on the plane, you want to fly to Bullhead City or you want to fly to Tucson or some other short route, that's who flies those planes. They're proposing a reduction in the flight hour requirement before joining a U.S. carrier. So that means, you know, in order to be qualify to be an airline pilot, you have to have flown a certain number of hours. They're saying, let's reduce that a little bit. That doesn't sound all that safe necessarily, but they're trying to figure out ways to get more pilots, qualified pilots in there. Airlines are also rethinking their training programs to lower the barrier to entry. Delta Airlines joined some others this year. They dropped the requirement that pilots have a four-year degree from its pilot hiring requirement. So they're saying you don't have to be a college grad, I guess, to be a pilot anymore. And then other airlines are recruiting pilots from other countries. So they're getting them from Australia and some other places because they're trying to bring in more pilots. They're desperate. And every time they don't have a pilot, they can't create a new flight. They can't make money. I mean, it's really, really difficult. So they're saying that this is something that's going to go on for at least the next 5 years. They're working on it, but it's going to take a long time to get things back up with these pilots. And part of the problem was obviously they were trying to, these airlines, if you remember, they got a little bailout from the federal government also, but they were just trying to keep the doors open. I mean, it's easy to look back now and say, what were you thinking giving all these pilots early retirement? But at the time, that was the only option. I mean, they didn't have money. So they tried to find a way to do it. And a lot of these pilots, I don't know if any are coming back, but I think a lot are saying, hey, I was in a great place. I had great retirement set up. They gave me a big giant bucket of money to retire early, and off I went. So very interesting. They're trying to hire. How many pilots do you think airlines are trying to hire right now? 12,000. All the airlines are trying to hire a total of 12,000 new pilots this year. That's double the previous record in annual hiring. That's what they're trying to do. So they are way, way down. Mesa Air Group, which we talked about earlier, you often see them if you're flying with American or United. They fly those shorter hop flights. They lost $43 million last quarter because they had to keep cutting flights. They don't have enough pilots. And the CEO is saying, I've never seen anything like this before, the attrition of our pilots. Because what's happening is if you're flying for a regional airline and you're qualified, you're going to get hired at one of the major airlines. So these smaller airlines that don't pay as well and it's not as good a job, they're losing people quickly. It's been a thing. I was talking to a private pilot who flies for somebody who owns his own plane recently. And he was telling me that the private pilots, many of them are leaving their jobs and going to the airlines because they can make twice as much money. And in the past, they didn't do it because being a private pilot is pretty nice. I mean, most of the time you're flying around a family or somebody for a company, and it's kind of a daily flight. You fly out, you fly back, you're home with your kids. You're not flying across country, staying in a hotel room. But he said a lot of private pilots now are starting to join the airlines because the demand is high and the pay is good and they're getting bonuses. I mean, it's a whole different thing. So we'll see where this goes. But it's going to be something that we all deal with for quite a while because it's going to continue to cause the airlines not to have. If you don't have enough pilots, you can't have enough flights. You don't have enough flights, the prices stay high. So we're going to feel it. There's really no question about that. The only question is how long, and that's going to be the scary part. Also, if you've been out flying now, how much I did it last week. I took a short trip last week. I have to tell you. And I'm not a guy who was against the mask. I saw the value in them. I'm not here to argue about masks, but it's nice not to have to wear the mask. I'm just going to tell you, it's nice not to have to wear a mask on a plane. It is. It's some people still did, and that's fine. But it was a very pleasant experience, and it definitely makes things a little bit better. So airlines are kind of getting back to normal. You can order a soft drink on the plane now without actually saying, you can say what you want. You don't have to hold up how many fingers you want. Those of you who have flown a certain airline know what I'm talking about. And it made for a much more enjoyable experience. I think the employees seem to be getting back, and without the mask, I mean, that's where a lot of the issues we heard about were coming from, right? When passengers were getting upset with the flight attendants, a lot of that was people complaining about having to wear a mask. And that's gone now. So hopefully a lot of those issues resolve, and working for an airline isn't quite the burden that it had become. So that's a good thing. And most of the airlines seem to be doing quite well, making money and get that business back on track. Hey, coming up, we're going to talk about the Suns, and boy, oh boy, this has been. Yesterday was tough. Game 6, Game 7, very, very tough. If you're a Suns fan or even just a casual fan, we thought this team was going to go to the championship, right? I mean, I thought this was going to come down to getting into the championship series and can the Suns do it, get over that hump. Last year we were there, won the first two, went 2-0 in the championship, the finals, and then lost. And the goal was to see, and everybody thought this was the year. And not only didn't we make it, didn't we win the final, we didn't even make it to the finals, and we didn't even make it to the conference championship. So the Suns lose yesterday to the Mavericks in extraordinarily embarrassing fashion. We're going to talk about that coming up after the news. Dave Burns is going to join us from 98.7 Arizona Sports. We'll get a breakdown and maybe some background. I'm going to ask Burnsy some questions about what happened. What are we hearing? Are there injuries? What was the deal with the DeAndre Ayton, who was benched in Game 7? I mean, we're going to try to get to the bottom of some of this with Dave Burns coming up in just a minute. So stay with us for that. And then also Jeff Munn, he's standing by here in the KTR News Center. He's going to bring you up to date on what's going on with that Buffalo shooter. We'll have some updates of things that are happening here in Arizona and around the world. Stay with us for that. It's the Mike Broomhead Show. I'm Barry Markson. It's KTAR.